I did see a comment that someone left the other day where they said something about ladies love the show. You really need to rein in your bits.
Who said that? Hey, who said that?
Whoever you are, you must be new here.
Hey, that's not going to happen.
Hey, whoever you are.
With peace and love, I think you've got, found the wrong show.
I know.
That's so funny.
This might not be the show for you.
I'm like, who said it?
What was their name?
Who said it? I might want to respond.
Where do they live?
Who said it? I actually, sometimes I like to get a little happy in those comments. I like to fight back. Come on.
It was so fun. The, again,
who
like,
said we took it too far? Who is saying that?
Invited, so call me back.
What's up, you guys, and welcome back to Emotionally Online, the weekly slumber party for heart to hearts and hot gossip, hosted by yours truly, the one and only Maddie Drosbeck, and back in our co-host cuck chair, you know her, you love her, it's Meg Ruoco.
From coast to coast, I'm the co-host.
We're recording on a Sunday.
We are.
Which is a little abnormal for us.
Mm-hmm. We usually record on a Monday. Mm-hmm. So we're feeling, it feels vulnerable. It feels
yeah.
raw.
Yeah. No, we're feeling ambitious this week.
We are.
I mean, Meg was party city this weekend.
Dude, it was that audio that was like, and then I have to party again. I have to wake up. Yeah. And I have to party again. I was going to say, you said we're getting after it. I was not getting after it yesterday. Yesterday I woke up and I was in a fugue state.
Yeah, I don't know how you managed to go to another party. We went to two parties on Friday and I left. I Irish goodbyed out of the second party.
Yeah.
Yeah. Much earlier. I was in bed at a reasonable hour. But Meg,
I believe I fell asleep around 4 a.m.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I was like fully in my bed tucked in by 11:30.
Here's the thing. It was one of our very good friends, Tanya's birthday. Shout out, Tanya. Love you,
shout
girl.
Out Tanya.
And I had to make sure that it was a good one.
Totally.
You know, so
the B-Day bash of the century.
The B-Day bash of the century. I made a point. Here's the thing is like, I am the friend that leaves the party early.
Mm-hmm.
Like, my friends, typically when they go to like a second location, that's when I know that we've kind of crossed the threshold into like gremlin hours.
Right.
And that's when for me, I'm like, I'm good. I don't need like the latter half of this evening, which typically will go from 1 to approximately 6 in the morning.
Yeah.
That's when I kind of call it. But when it's a bestie's birthday, you gotta follow them to the beautiful end.
Mm-hmm.
So I was locked in the entire night. I had approximately 1 million drinks. I woke up the next day and I was like, somehow I am going to have to rally to go to Hell's Kitchen for a birthday.
Oh my God.
That night as well.
The way you actually couldn't have paid me to do that. Like to rally is one thing. To rally to get to Hell's Kitchen is another. Like it would be a hard sell if I was even just rallying to stay in Bushwick.
Yeah. Two trains there.
No. I wouldn't do it.
Two trains there, and then I did take an Uber back, and we inexplicably were in so much traffic in the Uber back at 1 a.m. on a Saturday night.
What are people up to?
Dude, I don't fucking know. But you know what? I went. I'm glad that I went. I'm glad that I was able to celebrate my friend's birthday in Hell's Kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
I hadn't seen him in a while, so it was good to see him.
That's nice.
But oh my God, I'm tired. My body can't.
Mm-mm.
My body can't do this.
I keep forgetting what day it is.
Yes.
Because I feel like I've been, Violet was here visiting. And so I was operating on like a weekend schedule in mm-hmm. the middle of the week. So
yes.
Now I feel it's Sunday and I feel like it's Thursday.
At some point we'll be on a normal schedule, but I think that'll maybe 25 years from now.
Yeah. Yeah. In 25 years, we'll be on a normal schedule.
It'll be awesome.
And from now until then, it's bus club, another club.
Another club.
Another podcast. 18 podcasts in a row. TED Talk. Another podcast.
I was explaining to someone the other day because I hadn't seen this person in a little bit, and they're like, oh, like what's up with you? What's new? And I was like, yeah, so I'm doing this. I'm like, here's my day job, and then I'm doing, you know, the podcast. And then I'm actually doing another podcast. So it's two podcasts ultimately. And they were like, when do you just kind of like hang out? And I was like, I don't think I can anymore.
That's what the podcast is.
That's what
Meg and I only hang out with each other now.
We don't have time to hang out with other people. We actually only have time to hang out with each other.
It's just this, or I'm going to a birthday party. That's what my life has become.
It's birthday parties and this. And
the podcast. And you know what?
Meg and I are having too much fun. We actually can't hang out with other people.
Yeah, no, we can't. Because
unless you're having a birthday, and then we'll go because it's your birthday.
We'll go because it's your birthday. We care about you. Apparently, everyone that I know is either a Cancer or a Capricorn. Because in January, I am constantly going to birthday parties. And in July and August, I am constantly going to birthday parties. Yeah. What is that?
Yeah, I don't think I know anyone that's a Capricorn or Aquarius. I feel like everyone that I know is born from July to October.
Okay, yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
And then there's outliers throughout the rest of the year.
Well, I love when your birthday comes around because there's nothing surrounding
nothing
it.
Nothing ever. And you know what? I feel like everyone says that.
And it's
everyone's
great.
Always. And I think that's why I feel like usually around my birthday, people really do match the energy.
Totally.
And I think it's because who has a birthday in March?
Right.
Beginning of March.
Everyone's there to just celebrate.
It's the winter. Right. People are actually, I'm dying to have a good time.
Yeah. I'm
and
dying
it's also
to be cozy.
The turn of the season, this year on my birthday, it was nice enough for us to be hanging out outside at the bar, which was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like it's an opportune time for a birthday. Honestly,
it's a really
people sleep on
time.
March as a month to have a birthday,
but it's a really good birthday month.
I
will say I don't think I have a good birthday month, but that said, I do love my birthday.
Yeah. Well, it's your birthday month is hard because it's the vibes are good.
Vibes are high for sure.
Unfortunately, the reason the vibes are good are because there's a major holiday that does kind of overshadow the entire month.
That's true. Everyone's kind of gearing up for Christmas.
Yeah.
And everyone is having 1 million birthday,
right.
Or not birthday, but holiday parties.
Right.
So I'm kind of trying to shoehorn in a birthday at that time. But I love being a Sagittarius. Mm. I love a December 10th birthday. And the thing is I ultimately just, if I am trying to do something with a big group, because I've also kind of shifted my birthday approach as I've gotten older. I very much so go, I think what, similarly to you, spa vibes.
Mm-hmm.
And then if I try to do if I'm doing a friend dinner, that's
totally
cute and fun. If I am trying to do big birthday blowout, I try to make it as easy on people as possible.
Yeah.
I say, let's all go to a bar. We meet here. We drink. We have fun. We all laugh. We go home.
Right. We all go home.
We all go home. That's an important part.
Mm-hmm.
But I won't be going home on my own birthday.
No, of course not.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's important on a birthday. It actually, people need to leave.
Yeah.
And this is the part we don't talk about enough. But you can't all be in the final group.
An important part of manners, I think, is actually knowing where
when's
you are in the
time
tier
to
system
leave.
To leave the
right.
birthday.
And I think that it's some people will feel really bad about leaving. And
uh-huh.
Actually, you needed to leave.
Mm-hmm.
You needed to leave because
the whole group can't go to the second location.
And to get to that smaller group at the end of a birthday party is actually the best part of it.
Totally.
To me.
Yeah.
So I kind of love when people leave.
Yeah. You're right. It cannot be you every time.
No.
You have to know your place. You have to have a sense of decorum.
Totally.
So that you go, bye-bye.
Right.
This isn't my journey.
My time is up.
Yep.
Other people, center stage.
Yep.
There you go.
There you go. Perfect. I completely agree with that. I really, because I used to host a lot of parties because I famously had lived with 3 roommates. So we had pretty big places where we lived. And I would throw house parties a lot. And man, the people that overstayed their welcome.
Oh, I know.
Where I'd be like, getting pretty late, huh? It's 3 in the morning.
Right.
They're like, should we play another game of beer pong? And I'm no.
Okay, but it really does require such discernment because I've also felt that sometimes people understayed their welcome.
That's true.
And I'll be okay, you were actually supposed to be one of the final standing.
Yeah.
And you left way too early.
Yeah. That's how I felt. We went to our beautiful friend Tina's birthday the other night.
Oh,
that
was
the birthday that we went to before my friend Tanya's. And I felt so bad because we couldn't stay longer.
Yeah.
I was like, oh,
I know we did understand.
We understayed. Yeah. But Tina, girl, if you're listening,
Tina, we love you.
Next birthday, we're there the whole time.
Next birthday. We're literally living at your birthday party. You're
going
to have
to drag
in
the walls.
Us home.
Yeah.
We hit Tina's party.
Mm-hmm.
We went to Tanya's party.
Yep.
And we, at the end, right before I left, there I was.
At your end.
At my end. Right. I popped an edible.
Yep.
And we were dancing on the dance floor. And there was this man who did try to like come and join us. He seemed pretty significantly older than every other person in the place.
So I did do a little bit of sleuthing about who this guy was. There was a man there, the dapper man in the suit and the cane.
Yes.
That, I believe, was the owner.
Oh.
And then the guy who tried to dance with us, I believe, was the owner's son.
Okay, this would make sense to me because they didn't...
They were both old men.
Right. They didn't appear to fit in with either of the crowds that were at this place. Yeah. I was like, where did they come from?
Who are these guys? No, really inexplicable. But I do believe that they were like they were tied to the supper club somehow. And yes, one of them did try to kind of come in and join our dance party.
I actually like felt so awkward. And the thing about this dance floor too is that it's lined with mirrors, so you feel like you're in a dance studio
and you could see him coming.
Right, exactly. I just kept turning. It's like we're like dancing and then I turn and I face the mirror and I just like see him slowly inching closer and I'm like, I don't want to look at him.
Right.
Because I don't want to like, I don't want to dance with him.
No.
So I'm like trying to avert eye contact, but you really can't with the mirrors.
No.
So I'm like, I don't know where to look. And I just keep like, we're like spinning in place. And it's like simply because we can't lock in anywhere.
We're trying to create like a wide area for us, for people to kind of skirt around us. No, it was so funny. It was also hilarious because in like a sad and annoying way where we were having so much fun. Like, it was like pretty much an empty dance floor in this like big venue, which is my preferred dance floor.
Totally.
I love to spin around. I love to just kind of like run around on a dance floor. And we were having a grand old girly time. And then this fucking man.
And I was like, with peace and love.
With peace and love. Like, please don't dance with us. We don't know you. Like, please. We're just having a
fun girly
time over here.
I don't know you and I'm not open to knowing you.
No. Not tonight.
Here's the thing about me, and this is my vibe almost 100% of the time when I'm in public spaces. Like, I love the like idea of potentially, not that this guy was ever on the chopping block because he looked like 40 years our senior.
Certainly, yeah.
But there's also a part of me that's like, I don't think I'll ever meet someone in like out and about in life either, because I feel so, I'll never meet a man out and about in public.
Yeah.
Let me amend that statement.
Yep.
Because when a man approaches me in like a public bar space, I'm always like, like I feel like I bug out instantly, even if they're cute, even if they're hot in any way. I'm like, you can be hot and I'm still suspicious of you.
Yeah.
You can't fool me. Like, it's like, I feel like, I don't know, we've evolved as a species and I'm like, I know your tricks.
Yeah.
You're gorgeous. And you think that I'm going to just not notice that you're a venomous snake.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I know your little tricks. So I think unless I make the first move, I'm going to reject every person that ever approaches me in public forever, unless it's a woman.
Yeah.
And then have at it.
Yeah. Ladies, you
and
heard
then,
it here first.
You know what? Women, you can do whatever you want to me.
Yeah. And here's what I'll say. Men, women, both of you, you got a chance with me.
Yeah, no, men, you unfortunately do have to wait for me to make the first move.
Yeah.
Sorry.
The thing is like,
you can look at me from a distance.
Yeah. Here's my thing. And I actually don't think this is like a good quality of mine. It's something that I'm trying to work on in myself, but like it will get to a point in the night where like I become one of those men where I'm walking up to people and I'm like, how you doing?
See, but I like that. But because it's different when you're a woman.
I guess. Yeah. Maybe it's sexy when you're a woman.
Which is like, this is why I like going to Hank's and flirting with people at the bar, because I will do that.
We got to go back there more.
I love Hank's.
Every single time I go there, I'm like, this is a perfect bar.
It is.
It's a perfect
bar. And it's the perfect bar for flirting.
Yes.
I love to flirt at Hank's.
And everyone there is hot.
Everyone there is hot.
Yeah.
Perfect bar.
Perfect bar.
Perfect bar, perfect place.
Mm-hmm. Everyone stop having birthday parties.
Everyone stop. There's been too many of them.
Except for my friends who I love, but also stop it.
Yeah, and except for me. Because when it's my birthday, everyone's going to shake the house down.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Trust, I'm already planning my birthday that is in December. I have made the party full invite for it. I just haven't sent it to everybody yet.
Yeah, we're preparing.
Yeah, yeah.
But we have to hibernate for our own birthdays. Hope you can understand.
Yeah. After this weekend, I have to rest for the next like 4 to 6 business months.
Yeah. Oh, also, can I just say, when I left, the bouncer outside was hitting on me hard.
Totally.
I you know was what's trying so, to escape him, actually.
Whoa, you know what's so funny is you left, and a guy that I, it was like a mutual friend of Tanya's that like I don't know him super well, but he came in pretty shortly after you left, and he said he was like, the bouncer was trying to put in work on some lady outside.
That was me. That was me. I swear to God, I didn't know what to say. I was like trying to call the Uber and I was smoking at the same time, and he's like coming up to me, he's trying to shake my hand, and he's like, so like what did he say to me? He was like, you ever come around here before? And I was like, no. He's like, you're already leaving? You're leaving your friend? Come on. You can stay for a little longer. And I was like, no, I'm going to go to bed. And then he's like asking me what kind of food I like. And he's like, well, maybe I can make that happen for you. You should come back around here, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, yeah, no, okay. And I'm like slowly trying to walk away. And then he keeps kind of like, because he's manning the door. And then the second somebody would come in and he'd get like, he'd do his job. And then he'd like walk back over. And I'm slowly walking down the block. And he's like, keeps walking out farther, and like right before my Uber is almost there, and he comes over and he's like, the pleasure was all mine, beautiful. And I was like,
okay.
And again, like these, he was so much older.
That's
like
the thing.
I
all these men were so
old. They were
old.
So old. Yes. And I'm like, with peace and love, I'm not.
That's not my vibe.
I've got like a 10-year age gap limit.
Yeah.
I don't think I can go above 39.
Yeah. All love, but that's not my vibe.
All love. Truly, honestly, madly, deeply.
And I will say this, like, for as much of a flirt as I am on a night out, I love shutting people down when they're trying to flirt with me and I'm not in the mood. It's one of my favorite things to do, to be like, for them to be like, yeah, you're gorgeous, you come here off of me, and just be like, no, nothing.
Honestly, that's my least favorite part of it.
Oh, I love.
I'm like, I actually need men to leave me alone.
There's like a sick joy I get out of it, because I start to kind of like bully them.
Yeah.
And I'll be like, okay.
And I, honest to God, I think sometimes men perceive my disinterest as nervousness in like a cute way.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, no.
No.
I'm not like, ignoring you and like smiling and looking away because I think you're hot and you make me nervous.
I'm trying to get away from you.
I'm uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Because you're 30 years older than me and keep calling me beautiful.
You are talking to a woman who is mostly gay.
Exactly.
And I don't want to talk to you.
And I'm also like, there's something also so funny when like much older men hit on me, because I'm like, you would hate me.
Yeah.
You would not like me. Like, you actually could not spend one evening with me.
Yeah.
I'm going to talk to you about so many things that you do not give a single solitary fuck about.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I flirted really hard with a man who everyone afterwards told me was gay. So, you know, I still got it.
I think, unfortunately, my reality is that my type, loosely, of course, is typically people that are probably not at the bars.
This is the thing. Yeah, I'm like, your type, I don't think would be the person who's going up to women and like hitting on them at the bars.
Which is why I constantly am like, everyone stop talking to me.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, I know, I already know this isn't what I need it to be.
Yeah.
Please stop.
By choosing to engage in this conversation, you have already failed.
I already know that this is not going to work.
Right. You failed before it's even begun.
But Godspeed for trying.
It's where we differ, because again, I hit a point in the night where I'm just going up to literally anybody and being like, what do you think? Should we get out of here? I don't know why. And I was actually talking to our friend Emily about this. We're like, after the party Friday, she was like, there's something that happens in your brain where like a switch flips and all of a sudden you're just like talking, you're shooting your shot to anyone. And I'm like, yeah, I think it's like my frattiest quality about myself where I'm like, you and me, let me take you away from here. Like, I don't know
totally
what that is.
Come on, let me get you away from all this.
I become like a horny monster.
All these crazy people here. too loud. Your beautiful, precious eardrums. You're
beautiful. You don't need to work.
We have to preserve them.
Come on. Anyone. I'm doing it to anybody.
Yeah.
So, gay men included.
So?
You're not safe.
Totally.
I'm a double Sag with a Libra rising. Yeah. I don't know what you
Everyone's
want me.
Everyone's invited.
There's
to
no
this
excuse.
Vibe.
Yeah, here's the thing. Party's happening just at my place. Come on.
Totally. Come on over, you guys.
Come on over. The water's fine. I just like become the equivalent of those creepy old men, but I'm just like a young, beautiful woman. So yeah. I get away with it.
Well, yeah, I think it works because of that.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah. So,
and that's hot girl privilege.
Lucky me, I guess.
Okay, hot girl hotline. It's opened up the submission box.
Huge.
We're getting loose with it. We've heard your guys' comments that you love the audience submissions and you need us to do more of them.
Yeah.
And we talk too much. So here we are today attempting to get through more than one audience submission.
We're going to give it our best shot. I do want to say this was for the Pumpcast, not Emotionally Online, but I did see a comment that someone left the other day where they said something about ladies love the show. You really need to rein in your bits.
Who said that? Whoever said that?
Whoever you are, you must be new here.
Hey, that's not going to happen.
Hey, whoever you are.
With peace and love, I think you've found the wrong show.
I know.
That's so funny.
This might not be the show for you.
Was that on YouTube?
I think it was either on YouTube or in like the Spotify creator thing. I can't remember which one. But I was literally like, to say that about a comedy podcast.
I'm like, who said it?
What was their name?
Who said it? I might want to respond.
Where do they live?
Who said it? Sometimes I like to get a little happy on those comments. I like to fight back. Come on.
It was so fun. Again,
who
like,
said we took it too far? Who is saying that?
The idea of saying that about a comedy podcast.
Guys, I actually don't care.
Like, guys.
You're underestimating how stupid I like to be.
Yeah.
Okay.
Dare I say we actually do rein it in when we are on the
totally.
Podcast.
Well, this is the thing that's honestly even funnier.
Yes.
Is like, you actually haven't seen us.
No.
Not rein
no.
in. We're under the constraints of an audio platform and a podcast that's around an hour in length. Yeah. You don't want to see us not reined in.
Yeah. You don't want to know what we're like on a day-to-day.
Guys, I could do this for 10 hours straight.
Yeah.
I would not run out of things to say.
Right. You have no idea how much we're replacing the batteries in that little recording device. It is constant.
That's so funny.
It's amazing.
All right. Well, we're going to continue.
Mm-hmm.
Taking the bit.
With peace and love, we're not taking your advice.
No, we're about to like bully the bit into the ground.
Yeah. But we'll give advice in the submissions box.
Yes, in the submission box, we will do exactly that.
Mm-hmm.
So here we go.
Woo!
Hello, Maddie and Meg. I'm a huge fan of Emotionally Online and the Pumpcast, and I wanted to ask your thoughts on something that happened to me recently. I've been seeing this guy for a few months, and the other day I asked him what his type is. He said his preferred / ideal type is slim thick. I'm buying a gun, just putting it out there right now. I already don't like what I'm reading.
Men don't speak anymore, challenge.
I asked what he meant by this, since I feel like different people have different definitions. He said, well, like, for example, I would consider you thick. I'm plus size / curvy. So I guess I like a smaller waist. I clarified. So you mean like a thin girl with hips? And he said yes. To be honest, this hit me like a freight train, because even though I know what he meant, and I think it's an accurate description, there's something about him using my body as a jumping off point to then describe how it would be different if it were ideal. I don't know. Am I crazy for wanting to end things over this? I want to be with someone who thinks my body is ideal, but maybe I'm being unrealistic. Would love to hear your thoughts, and thanks so much for the work you do. Okay, let's start here. It is not unrealistic to expect the person you're with like your body.
Are you crazy for thinking of ending it over this? Why haven't you ended it already?
I know. I have so many thoughts. I literally, I have always disliked the term slim thick.
Me too. You just mean thin.
I don't know what the fuck you mean by that. I remember when it was like really popular in college, I used to rage out about this all the time.
Yeah.
Because I was like, half the time the people that men will describe as being slim thick are quite literally just thin women. Mm-hmm. They are not even women that I would call curvy.
Yeah.
Also,
this is like, it's giving me hives.
Let's say,
thinking about having this conversation with a man like this is giving me hives.
It's also irritating to me because let's like, let's just hear what he said for a second.
Mm-hmm.
His type is slim thick. Do you know how few people genetically have bodies that look like that?
Basically no one.
Almost none.
Yep.
Most of the women you see online that like if you Googled slim thick, who would pop up?
Yeah.
Most of them are women who like have BBLs.
Well, I was going to say what this tells me is that he has porn rot brain.
Yeah.
Because whether he is watching porn with women like this who have like surgically made their bodies look like this, or he is just consuming content of like, you know, Instagram baddies or yeah. whatever. Like, that's porn rot.
It's edited.
Yes.
It's not real. You are not like a woman on the internet or a porn star or one of these, you know, women that he has consumed clearly over the years. You are a real woman standing in front of him and he's saying, oh yeah, my type is actually slim thick. This made up thing that the internet has procured for me.
I mean, what he just said to you is my type is skinny bitches and you're fat.
Yeah, let's call it what
let's
it is.
Let's call a spade. Like, let's not mince our words here. That's what he said. And like,
well, for example, I'd consider you thick.
Can I say that I fucking hate the term thick?
So do I.
I fucking hate, call me fat.
Just call, it's call, fine. Please call me fat.
I am not.
Please, for the love of
there's
God.
There's actually something about the word thick that it is so sexual
it
to
is.
Me.
It is completely sexual.
That like makes me feel like physically ill.
Yeah. I
where agree. I'm like, my body is not thick. I am a fat woman.
Right.
That's fine.
It's also like sometimes when people use these roundabout words like this, it makes me feel like they're exposing their own fatphobia. It's like totally. You won't even say the word out loud.
Yeah. You can't even say fat because it's like that frightening and bad to
and
you.
You assume that it's like so insulting to say that mm-hmm. word to me mm-hmm. that you won't even touch it when
right.
we both know that that's what I am.
Right.
Like I don't. Yeah, that to me would suggest that they had views on fat bodies that don't align with my own. I also think this is an interesting conversation to bring up after dating someone for a few months.
Yep.
Which I do want to pause on this momentarily just to say that you do not have to ask the person that you're seeing what their type is so that you can analyze whether or not you fit that type.
I actually never want to know what anyone's I'm dating's type is.
Yeah. Especially because like I don't love my type in the way that most people use that or yeah. the way that men use it.
Yeah.
I think a lot of times when women are talking about their type, it's they're like just talking about like
driven.
And like what they've commonly been drawn to in the past.
Yeah.
What are like the repeat patterns of like the types of people they've dated and the vibe they bring
right.
to the function.
Right.
When men talk about their type, most of the time they're like placing an order.
Yep.
It's like a mail order bride and you have to fit all these characteristics.
Yep.
And if not, you're an ugly fat whore.
Yeah.
And I don't like that it feels like a demand
yeah.
for like what you need to be.
I agree. I think also if I'm dating someone, I'm just like, okay, I have to assume I'm your type somehow.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like I'm not
we're dating
too worried about it.
Totally. If you're dating someone for several months, you said you've been seeing this guy for the last few months.
Mm.
You are his type.
You are his type. And you should end it with him because
yeah.
that guy sucks.
I don't
ass.
Like the way he handled this conversation.
No. The way he responded is insane and to me, like, genuinely perverted and freakish.
Yeah.
I'm like, why are you talking about women like that?
Yeah, I don't like it at all.
Also, the fact that he immediately went to body type when he was talking about type, like, I'm just
again,
like...
Again, this is what men do this.
Yeah.
Where it's like, again, you ask a woman for her type and she's explaining personality,
yep.
vibe.
Yep.
Just general interests,
mm-hmm.
things like that. And mm-hmm. You ask a man what his type is and they go straight to body type. You deserve to be with someone who makes you feel more confident, mm-hmm. not less.
Yep.
And there's part of me that reads this submission And again, this is me like drawing my own assumptions or conclusions about this. Mm-hmm. But when I hear that after months of dating this person, you felt like you needed to ask him what his type is, that would suggest to me that you already felt insecure in this relationship.
Yes.
Beforehand.
Yep.
And that's why you asked. And now he's reinforced that insecurity instead of made it better in any way.
Yeah.
So I don't foresee this being a relationship that's going to make you feel good or sexy, beautiful, confident, any of these things. Mm-hmm. It seems like there may have been an underlying insecurity that existed before this conversation, mm-hmm. and this conversation just reinforced that insecurity.
Yeah. I was thinking the same thing. Like, what was the impetus for asking this question in the first place? And yeah, I've been there, not exactly with, you know, like asking somebody what their type is and them responding in this way. But like, I've been in situations where I've been seeing people or like sleeping with them or whatever, and having that gut feeling of like, I don't think this person is treating me in the way that they should be. And, it's really shitty, and it makes you feel like you're kind of being gaslit. Mm-hmm. And I just want to like affirm for you that like, there are people out there who find you attractive with no qualifications. Like there are going to be people out there who are just like, my type is you.
Yeah.
And that's it. So I don't think that you need to put up with some fuckhead.
Yeah.
Saying bullshit. Like,
truly,
like this.
I wish that I could reach every, you know, plus size woman in the world, mm-hmm. and shake her and just be like, never for a moment think that it is unrealistic, mm-hmm. to expect someone to love you exactly as you are.
Yeah.
It is not unrealistic.
It isn't. Because I bet also that you have proof of that in your life in other relationships.
Yeah.
I bet that you have friends who love you exactly as you are, and that you have family members who love you exactly as you are. So why is the expectation that you have to make sacrifices for a romantic partner? It's just not true. You have living proof in your life that this is possible. I just, you know.
The only reason it wouldn't be possible is if you're with a shallow partner.
Yep.
And that's not on you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I think for me, this would be grounds for ending it.
Yeah, he sounds like an absolute doo-doo head.
Yeah, I'd protect yourself and mm-hmm. your heart.
Mm-hmm.
And you're deserving of more than this.
Yeah. Someone who just like finds you sexy, period.
Yeah. Period. Last week, I dumped my third or possibly fourth therapist. All of which, after less than 3 months, and no matter how much I initially get on with someone, I find that I come up against the same blocker, that I just don't trust them. Something in me tells me that being a therapist is an untrustworthy profession, and I find myself blatantly lying to them in order to protect myself or others. I feel I was very honest with my last therapist about this, but I just can't push through it. It becomes especially difficult when I am then asked about my family. I have easily spent hundreds of dollars on sitting in complete silence and refusing to talk when questioned about them. What's really weird is I don't actually think there's much to share on them. I just immediately lose all trust in a therapist as soon as they bring it up. This is obviously quite frustrating because those guys love knowing about your family. I guess my question is, at what point do I accept that therapy probably is never going to work for me?
Can I just say what my favorite part of that submission is?
Yeah.
When they said that anytime the therapist brings up their family, they sit in complete silence for hours, and then immediately following that sentence with, weirdly enough, I don't actually think there's much to say about them.
Yeah.
What?
With peace, I say this with so much peace and love.
Like, all love.
Truly all the peace and love in my heart.
Yeah.
There is something to dig into there.
the most fragile way you could have said it. Something to explore there.
Something's definitely going on. Okay.
Yeah.
Multiple things. When I saw this in the box, I was like, okay, we've got to do some unpacking here, babe. Yeah. Because what happened? Why?
Yeah.
why? What happened? What did a therapist do to you to make them so untrustworthy to you?
Here's what I will say. This is, it's really tough because therapy has become something that I think has become more accessible, which on a grand scale, I think is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
That said, I think people can get real in the weeds about how they think therapy is supposed to work.
Yeah.
Without ever actually doing it.
Right.
And like I, for instance, have gone to therapists before where I get to a point where I'm like, I don't think they can really help me. I think we're on like different wavelengths and that's fine. It's been known to happen. Finding the right therapist for you takes time.
It's a process.
It's a process. What you are revealing in this submission is that there is something happening inside of you that makes you completely shut down.
Yeah.
The minute a therapist brings up the topic of your family.
And maybe other things also.
Yeah.
Like when you say something in me tells me that being a therapist is an untrustworthy profession.
Right.
And I find myself blatantly lying in order to protect myself or others.
Pause.
Protect yourself from what? I don't know what you think therapy is or isn't.
Right.
But I'll tell you what my perspective on it is.
Mm-hmm.
My perspective on therapy is that it is a space where I can just talk about my life, my relationships, the things I'm reflecting on with a neutral third party that just wants to ask me reflective questions so that I can dig deeper into myself.
Mm-hmm.
My therapist is not there to tell me anything about myself, to make final rulings on me, to tell me what I can or can't do, to judge me in any way.
Mm-hmm.
She's there to be a mirror for me and reflect back questions and like helpful reflection points. They're going to help me dig into myself.
Right.
Therapy is more about helping you connect with you. Your therapist is not trying to like extract information from you to then harvest and judge you and whatever else. There's no risk factor to talking about your relationships and the reflections you're having about them.
And they're actually legally not allowed to talk about it with anybody else.
Right. And I think that like finding the right therapist for you, it will change your experience with therapy. Like I prefer, some people have much older therapists. I prefer to have a young therapist.
Mm-hmm.
My therapist is like 2 years older than me.
Yeah.
And it helps because I feel like she can intimately understand and relate to the stuff that I talk about with social media or like the relationship dynamics of people around our age group, the things that we believe, living in New York City, how like the city influences the way that people are. And like, it's nice to me to be able to like just speak to someone who I do feel truly understands everything that I'm saying.
Yeah.
And again, she's not there to project any sort of individual judgment on me. Like I don't, most of the time, it's rare, if ever, that my therapist will blatantly be like, I agree completely.
Yeah.
Like, you are 100% in the right. Like, your therapist is not there to be like, yes, it's right or wrong. Like, it's so rare that that would even come up in therapy.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not about that. There's no final rulings being made on anybody, you or your family members or friends or whoever you're talking about.
Yeah.
I don't know why you would think that being a therapist is an untrustworthy profession. And I do feel that if you are blatantly lying to your therapists, you're not even getting out of therapy. Like you're stopping any productive outcomes you could get from therapy straight in their tracks. If you're lying and not being open with your therapist and walking into therapy with like an open heart, open mind, just like committing yourself to going through the process, like you're never going to get anything positive out of it.
Yeah. This is a really interesting case because it seems like there's a lot happening in this person's body. Like there is something in this person that keeps them coming back to therapy.
Right.
So it's like there's something in their body that's trying to get out in therapy.
Yeah.
But for whatever reason, they're like stopping it before it can kind of like escape. And at the same time, there's this with this inherent like untrustworthiness. This feeling that therapy is like a gotcha. It's yeah. all leading up to a gotcha. Like, I feel like you're heading into therapy being like, when is my therapist going to be like, gotcha?
Right.
I don't know where that comes from for you. But I mean, maybe therapy right now isn't the right thing for you if you are lying to these people.
Yeah.
Maybe it's about interrogating in yourself what keeps you, one, wanting to go to therapy, and two, from being honest when you're there. Like,
yeah,
there is something happening in your body, clearly, that you want to talk about.
Yeah.
Whatever that blockage is, that's the thing that you need to, like, turn your eye to.
It also makes me wonder, like, the idea of withholding or lying to your therapist mm-hmm. in order to protect yourself or others. Mm-hmm. And then later on in the submission being like, you know, it becomes difficult when I'm asked about family and I shut down, I'm in complete silence and I refuse to talk when questioned about them. It makes me wonder what it is you're trying to protect or like what it is about family specifically that you feel you can't touch or can't think about. Mm-hmm. And part of me wonders if you maybe have fallen into the belief that like you cannot confront difficult, challenging, or critical assessment of people you love without it meaning that someone is like 100% bad mm-hmm. and you like you can't reckon with there being good and bad parts of our families mm-hmm. and our friends. And I think family is like a complicated conversation for every person because,
yeah,
I mean, you have a group of people, you know, between 2 and 8 people in a family, let's mm-hmm. say, there's always going to be conflict there because you're not all mirrors for each other.
Right.
And some is more difficult to sit in than others. And I know from, you know, dealing with my own conflict within my family, sometimes it is hard to face if you had a different image of your family as a child or in a different era of your family, and then something changes, something mm-hmm. happens, mm-hmm. and it can be hard to face because you don't want your image of your family to change and you don't want other people's opinions of your family members to change. So you feel like you have to protect people to keep it as it is and not face it. But I do think that not facing whatever the thing is makes it worse.
Yeah.
And I think that by facing it and by allowing yourself and people around you to be imperfect people that contain the ability to be both good and bad, and that none of this is a final ruling on anyone as a person, you open yourself up to so much more closeness and healing
yeah.
than you would expect there to be. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm drawing some conclusions here myself based on what I'm reading, but I just don't, it's clear that you are avoiding something.
Yes.
I don't know what that something is, but I feel confidently that confronting it head on, looking at it, sitting in it, mm-hmm. only serves to help you.
Yeah.
My truth is that I'm always going to love a forbidden romance trope, and you guys know I love a spicy read, but what if the forbidden romance was also a cowboy romance? A hot, steamy, former pro bull rider with an employee that's slowly falling in love with him. If you're a fan of contemporary cowboy romances by authors like Bailey Hanna, Lila Sage, Elsie Silver, or Paisley Hope, you will absolutely love Taming of the Heart by Elliot Rose, which is a part of the Crimson Ridge series. Each book in the series reads as a standalone, but they all take place in the same remote small town, and they're all, of course, very spicy. Taming of the Heart is super spicy. It has very explicit sexual imagery and language throughout, which obviously is exactly what I signed up for. And it basically just drops you right into what it would be like to be hired by a ranch for the summer, except your boss is unreasonably hot. Literally looks like every fantasy and daydream you've ever had come to life. Oh, and he's already accidentally seen your favorite toy. Okay. You're the eldest daughter. You lock your heart away safely out of sight. But then boom, a former pro bull rider, much older than you, with a mustache, might I add, that makes you weak at the knees, shows up. He's the whole package. And he's luring you in with glimpses of what it might be like to let your guard down for the first time in your entire life. I know you guys are going to love it. I've been sucked in from the moment I picked it up. You can find Taming of the Heart by Elliot Rose wherever books are sold, in print and in ebook. And you can learn more by checking out Kensington Publishing at kensingtonbooks.com.
Yeah. There's clearly some part of you that wants to confront whatever this thing is.
Also, I'm like, I think it's really interesting. I'm curious if writing this down brought anything up for you.
Yeah.
Because, like, I think I'm so fascinated by this mission.
Me too.
I really
this
am.
Is, like, really interesting.
But, like, when we get to the last part where it's like, I've easily spent hundreds of dollars on sitting in complete silence and refusing to talk when questioned about them. What's really weird is I don't actually think there's much to share on them.
Right.
I just immediately lose all trust in a therapist as soon as they bring it up. Why?
These things are connected.
There's no way that you could be like, as soon as a therapist brings up therapy, I don't trust them.
Yeah.
And there's nothing to explain why I might think that way. Like,
yep.
There's nothing
further to
nothing
explore there.
To talk about family at all. Like, why is it that you think that a therapist wanting to understand your family history or family dynamic would mean something about their trustworthiness?
Right.
And you, like, hearing them ask about your family at all makes you, I don't know, to like lose all trust in a therapist as soon as they
really
ask you about your family is really strange to me.
Really,
because that's a very normal thing for a therapist to ask you about.
Yep.
Because we are all shaped by our families and
right.
how we were raised.
Right.
And understanding someone's history and backstory as a person just allows you to be a better therapist.
Yeah.
So I think it sounds like your therapist may have been trying to understand you better,
mm-hmm.
and you've shut it down for some reason, and I don't know why.
Me either. I'm thinking in my head about, like, what is some, like, even practical advice that we can give this person, and I'm like, for the first thing that comes to mind is, like, maybe just, like, free writing. Like, free association
yeah.
of, like, no judgment, no, just curiosity,
right.
leading with curiosity, like, why do I feel so distrusting of therapists when they bring up my family? And just like writing something down
right.
for like 30 minutes. It's just pen, not leaving paper, just writing something down. I also maybe would just encourage, if this person is still interested in pursuing therapy, which it sounds like maybe you should.
I think you definitely should, but you should reflect on why you're so hesitant to fully participate in therapy
yeah.
first.
Yeah. And I think I would just encourage this person to, if they are like, there's not much to say about my family, just say what there is to say about them.
Entertain it.
Entertain it.
I like oftentimes, like, sometimes I go into therapy and there's something actively on my mind that
mm-hmm.
I want to talk about, but sometimes there's not. And my therapist will be like, what do you want to talk about
mm-hmm.
today? And I'll be like, I actually don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing's really coming to mind.
Yeah.
And my therapist will usually start by asking me a question about something I mentioned a long time ago.
Uh-huh.
Being like, what have been like some new reflections you've had about this? Or how's so-and-so a person doing?
Mm-hmm.
What's your relationship been like with them over the last 6 months? Like, or I know you have this trip to see your family coming up. How are you feeling about that? Blah,
yep.
blah, blah, whatever. And usually in having this like mundane conversation with my therapist about just being like, oh, I'm getting ready to go on vacation with my family and I'm excited to see my sister and blah, 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 whatever. Like it will usually lead into some kind of internal mm-hmm. reflection or reckoning that I was not expecting to mm-hmm. have. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you do just have to allow yourself to have like a regular conversation in therapy.
Yep.
And being like, yeah, I have a mom and two sisters, and I was really close with this one sister growing up because we both did dance class together.
Right.
Like, you just have to like have a conversation that you think should mean nothing to your therapist mm-hmm. and see what comes out and like where it leads you.
Yeah. Yeah, like if you have nothing, if you don't have much to say, say what it is and just see where that goes.
And like part of finding a good therapist is finding someone that's able to ask you the right questions.
And I think it sounds like you have a lot of like agita about being interrogated.
Yeah.
In some ways, that's what therapy is.
Yeah, they're only there to ask questions.
Yes.
But they're not there to talk about themselves at all.
And so that you can interrogate yourself. Right. So something in you is blocking you from interrogating that. And it's really interesting to me that I think like, it sounds like you're trying to protect yourself from something.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is. There's something in you that yeah. again is like trying to like claw its way out, and there you are doing everything you can in order to protect yourself from it. I would head into that deep, dark cave, my friend.
Yeah. The line, this is obviously quite frustrating because those guys love knowing about your family. Is genuinely it's so funny.
That's awesome.
Those guys fucking love to be in your business about therapists your family. Therapists
freaking cream their jeans when they hear about your fucking family,
your
dude.
Therapist that wants to understand the full picture and history of you.
The therapist
they want to know about your family.
Your therapist who's meeting you, a stranger, and has right. to like, their job is to interrogate you about your life and
totally
the complexities of who you are as a person.
How we were raised in our families have like a massive impact
yes.
on who we are, how we react to things yes. in our adulthood. Like even things you would think don't have anything to do with your family probably do.
Yes.
Like the amount of things that I've uncovered in therapy about my relationship with my mom,
right,
my relationship with my grandma, my right. dad, like our family dynamic as a whole, the expectations put on me as the eldest daughter. Like there's been so many parts of my childhood that I've unpacked in therapy, and some of it's been hard,
yeah,
but a lot of it has made me feel a lot more confident in those relationships
uh-huh.
because I understand our history, my position to each of them, what boundaries I need to set to have better relationships with my family members mm-hmm. like only good things come from it.
And like if you think your relationship with your family is like super fine and neutral, talk about that.
Yeah.
Talk about why it's super fine and neutral.
Right.
That's it. It doesn't have to be, if there really is no like, you know,
there's nothing to say.
If there's nothing to say, then just talk about
what it is.
What it is. Right.
Your therapist is not there like a fucking detective trying to extract information about your family.
They're not luring you into some sort of trap.
Yeah.
It's their job to ask you questions.
Yeah.
Good luck.
So I don't know what has, I don't know how we got here.
Godspeed though.
But I, yeah, just think about it.
Think on it. Hey, no pressure. Just
give it a think.
Give it a think.
And I wouldn't accept, the last question they ask is, at what point do I just accept that therapy probably is never going to work for me? Don't even touch that for right now.
Yeah.
Because I think we have other things to reflect on first, mm-hmm. of which you wrote about in the body of your submission. So maybe just focus on the middle part and not the ending.
Here's what I will also say, because a lot of people think about therapy exclusively as like talk therapy.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe talk therapy isn't for you.
Yeah.
Maybe you should focus more on, what is the
EMDR.
There's EMDR therapy. There's therapy that I think CBT is mm-hmm. is also a type of therapy that specifically CBT therapy is focuses on like you in the present moment, and a lot of times there's actually a lot of less focus on your past and like your relationships to your family or things like that, and it deals more with like how you feel in your body. So maybe that's something to explore
mm-hmm.
before doing like a talk therapy. Because again, it yeah. sounds like there is a real blockage in your right. body. That
sounds
is,
like we have things to unlock.
Yeah. Really wanting to.
Before we can feel comfortable talking.
Come out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
Give it a think.
Have a think on that. Hi, Maddie and Meg. I love you girls and this beautiful online community. You make me laugh until I cry and give some of the best advice out there. See, they don't think we take the bit too far.
Yeah.
They love our bits.
Thanks, girl. Or person.
Here's my situation. As a 30-year-old girl, I have been on a journey with self-love, especially relating to body image. But this year, I feel have finally stopped wanting to be thinner and truly started to feel hot in the body I have. Woohoo! However, one of my close friends continues to constantly share her desire to lose weight, despite being a size 4/6 and physically active. She has recently joined a weight loss group. We'll call it Sweight Swatchers. The added S stands for Satan. And often comments on being fat or not being allowed to eat certain foods. I recognize that this is part in product of a system we all have sadly grown up in. Hello, early 2000s diet culture. Mm-hmm. But I find it so infuriating she can't see that or attempt to challenge her way of thinking, immediately jumping to losing weight instead of doing inner/mental health work. I also don't want to be around this kind of conversation and risk undoing my growth relating to the topic. So far, I have just been disengaging/cutting off convos/changing topics whenever this comes up. I think it might be time to set a boundary around this topic with her, whilst also opening a door for her to start challenging her views on food/body image, but I'm not sure how. I'm worried it will start an argument and that it may not be my place as long as she's not coming to harm. Any advice you have on how to navigate this situation would be great. Thanks and lots of love. My take is, like, even if your friend is not coming to a place of like bodily harm to herself, she's definitely subjecting herself to mental harm
for sure.
And you have a responsibility to yourself to protect the amount of healing and inner work you've done to find peace within yourself.
Mm-hmm.
That I agree requires a boundary set.
Absolutely.
And we can't control how the other person reacts to that boundary being set. All we can do is set the boundary, protect ourselves, and, you know, move forward however we can.
Yeah.
React, respond to however they react in the moment. Mm-hmm. Hopefully your friend is receptive and willing to be introspective about it.
Yeah.
And if they're not, we cross that bridge when we get to it. But yeah, I would also struggle with this.
Big time.
I think that, like, if you're someone that has gone through a reckoning with your body image, many of us have, many of us haven't. But if you have, it is hard to be around people who have not.
Yep.
Particularly people that are not even interested in trying to.
Yeah.
Like, I think when people are like in the middle of their reckoning, that's almost one thing. Still difficult in a different way. But when people are like unconcerned about having a body image reckoning at all, it's like, well, this is going to be a problem we keep running into then.
Yeah.
Because once you have a better relationship with your body, it's painful to be around people who don't even attempt to have a neutral relationship with their own.
Going through like a liberation experience,
yeah,
like liberating yourself from fat phobia will throw into such a harsh light how casually fat phobic people are all the time. And in places that are so inappropriate, mm-hmm, in conversations that do not ask for it at all of a sudden someone's tossing, your coworker's saying shit like, oh, I'm so fat today, like I can't have lunch, I'm so fat today, I had a donut for breakfast, and you're like, whoa, why are we talking about this?
Why the hell did you just say that?
Yeah, like,
why'd you bring that energy to the office, Dave?
Why the fuck are we talking about that? Let's look at the spreadsheets, Dave.
And like, I think you'd be shocked at, or maybe you wouldn't be shocked at how often it happens.
Yeah.
And I feel that like it's something that makes me feel more sad than anything else. Like, it definitely, there was a period of time where it made piss me off and make me angry. And,
totally. Which is also valid.
Totally. And I think when it's more insidious and like directly harmful, I definitely do still have that reaction. But like when I'm hanging out with like friends of friends or people that I'm not around all that often. And one of them makes a comment like the one you mentioned about like, oh, I ate so much for breakfast that I just skipped lunch altogether.
Right.
I'm so bloated. And it's like the thinnest person you've ever seen.
Right.
I don't understand what, I mean, honestly, the idea of like, being frustrated about being bloated for like the aesthetic of that versus like how it feels in your body has always confused me.
Yeah.
I look so bloated. What?
Yeah.
If you're complaining about being bloated because of how it feels,
fine.
Totally. When we're talking about I look so bloated, that's just like a different way of saying I look so fat.
I look fat. Yeah. Like you're just saying I look fat.
I don't know what are we talking about?
Right.
I've just never understood shit like that.
Yeah. I have I really feel for this person because I have a lot of really close people to me in my life who I love so dearly who really struggle with internalized fat phobia.
Yeah.
And it isn't easy to be around. Yeah. And I have said to them at this point, like, you can feel that all you want. Don't say that shit to me.
Yeah.
I have done too much work on myself to let that all wash away.
Yeah.
And get sucked back into this terrible, terrible dynamic. Mm-hmm. It's hard enough, you know, like keeping up the kind of like body neutrality thing. If I have my own things going on,
yeah,
right? Like being kind to myself and reminding myself, that's gotten easier with time for sure. But like rewiring my brain took so much effort. And I just, there's just no world where I am ever going back there again. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to be friends with people who are constantly having negative body talk. I really understand that. And I think you are exactly right in that you do need to set that boundary with that person. Because I would bet money on the fact that they don't even realize that they're doing it.
Yeah.
Because it's so common for them. Mm-hmm. That's how they talk to themselves.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that they have no concept of like how it is impacting you at all. So I would absolutely talk to them. And, you know, it's really interesting because I think, Maddie, you and I share a similar experience in that I grew up like hating myself and my body for the first 2+ decades of my life.
Yep.
Hating myself. Not even a thought crossed my mind that anyone could think differently about themselves.
Yep.
I thought that that's just how everyone thought about themselves was like, I hate myself. I'm a bad person because I am fat.
Yep.
And until I lose the weight, I am worthless
yep.
to society, to the people around me. I'm lazy. I can't do anything. This is my lot in life.
Yep.
I will never be loved because of my body.
Yeah. I grew up feeling like I would experience a life that was a fraction of how beautiful everyone else's would be because of
exactly,
what I looked like.
Exactly how I felt.
I thought that I would be on the sidelines watching other people get to live the life that I wanted to forever.
Literally, I'm getting that's exactly how I felt word for word is I was like, I will cheer people on as they get to live their lives that I want, but I do not deserve because of my body.
Yeah.
And it's been really interesting becoming friends with people in my adult life now that I do not feel that way.
Yeah.
Because they assume that I have always been like like this.
Yeah.
Like how I am now. Like body neutral. Mm-hmm. And they'll look to me sometimes and act as though I'm like different or special. Like they're like, well, obviously you don't think this because you've always been this way. And I have had to explain actually as recently as like a couple months ago, I've had to explain to like some very close friends of mine that like the way that I feel now and the way that I like move and talk about my body or don't talk about my body now is because of work that I have put in to not feel this way.
Yeah.
And that actually I'm not special. I just chose a different path.
Mm-hmm.
I just chose to do something else.
Right. I questioned things.
I questioned things.
I started to look around and I was like, well, actually, this is kind of ridiculous when you lay it out.
Uh-huh.
Call it what it is. Why should it be that because I look aesthetically different from the person standing next to me, that I should not have a life as beautiful as them?
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
And it's been so interesting to watch everything that was, you know, given to me in a narrative as a kid of like, you're not going to be able to achieve this. You're not going to be able to get this. You know, you're not going to be able to experience like love or dating in a regular way. You're not going to be able to like get the jobs that you want because you look a certain way. All of that has been proven false.
Yeah.
And at some point I started to think to myself, I think everyone else might just be wrong.
Yeah.
And the minute that happens and it kind of clicks for you, you're like, oh, yes.
Yeah.
Everyone is telling me this shit because they're consumed by their own fatphobic misery.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm choosing not to be.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is now, and it's like, it makes me kind of laugh because of how ridiculous it is. But it's like the funny thing now is like, I haven't. Nothing about my physical appearance really has changed as I've gotten, like, my body hasn't changed. I'm still a fat woman. I still look the way that I did, you know, 3 or 4 years ago or whatever. But like the way that I move through my life now that has completely rejected this system, people respond so well to me. And not to like toot my own horn, but like people will be like, yes, you've got like a really sexy vibe about you. Like you're a very beautiful person. And I'm like, that is so funny because I literally never thought that that would be possible when I was younger.
Right.
For people to act as though I am desirable. Yep. For people to believe that I am desirable.
Totally.
And when it comes to like the friend thing, unfortunately, what I have found is that there really is no good workaround for like teaching your friend how to talk to you or not talk about these topics other than just saying, I don't want you to talk about this stuff with me.
Yeah, you actually, this is a topic that's now off limits between the two of us.
Yeah. Because the unfortunate reality is that you can't do that work for them.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, this person knows, she blatantly said, like, I've had a reckoning with my, you know, body image and that sort of thing. It's like, you know how hard that work is.
Yeah.
It's really hard to like claw your way out of this hole that like seemingly everyone else is in.
And most people will never choose to do that.
Most people won't. And so, you know, I think if this is a good friend to you and you love them and you care about them, like, unfortunately, the reality is that you're just going to have to accept that they feel about their body however they feel about them. But that doesn't mean that they have to talk about it with you.
Yeah.
It's just a no. I think it's just like a no crossing zone.
Yeah.
And I think in some ways, you know, I feel a lot of sadness for my friends who still feel this way.
Me
I feel
too.
Like a lot of sadness. And it really does like break my heart a lot.
Yeah.
Seeing friends of mine who have whatever bodies they have and feel that they need to change.
Right.
And we have talked about how we've had friends of ours whose bodies have changed and like they have gotten smaller. And guess what? Their problems haven't gone away.
Yeah. Because, yeah, changing what your body looks like does not change the relationship you have with it.
No.
Right. Unfortunately, you do have to work on that kind of regardless of anything.
Right. Which sucks. But Yeah, I really feel for you.
It's hard.
It's really hard. It's really hard. And it's, I think, you know, if this person is a good friend to you in other ways, then they'll understand you bringing this to them and hopefully meet you with like compassion and grace. And, you know, hopefully they will correct that behavior around you.
Oh, it really does make me ill thinking about someone who's a size 4 joining Weight Watchers.
I was just thinking that. I'm like, oh, God. It's really, it's just really astounding to me, the length that people will go to be thin.
Yeah. And it's astounding to me how few people will say that it's crazy.
Yes.
Like, to me, when I hear that like a size 4 is signing up for Weight Watchers, in my brain, it's like, why are they allowed to do that?
No, I'm literally like, that should be illegal.
Nobody stepped in to be like, hey, maybe not.
Hey, don't.
You're fine.
Don't do that. And it's like, I don't even really at this point talk about with my friends, like if I'm trying to like work out more or right. like change what it is that I'm eating. I think like Maddie and I will talk about it on occasion. Mm-hmm. The reason that I don't is because I know that I'm talking about it differently than my friends.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Totally. Well, like, I think it's different to have that conversation with someone who, you know, has already done the work to
yes.
detach from like the way that fat phobia wants you to talk about
exactly
like, changing your relationship with movement or with food. Like mm-hmm. I've talked about this a lot on the podcast and on my YouTube channel in like so much of my reckoning with my body has also been, having the opportunity to rebuild my relationship with food and movement
yeah.
in a way that movement is no longer used for punishment.
Yeah.
And it's a way to, you know, experience joy in my body. I started mm-hmm. calling it recess mm-hmm. and like getting to, yeah, just redo it and
yeah.
make it look so different. And when I'm trying to learn about like, healthier and more colorful and balanced meals to cook for myself, like, those are not things that I'm doing or choices I'm making as a way to change myself or punish my body.
Yep.
There's no aesthetic or like physical reference to those things at all. It's mm-hmm. simply about wanting to bring more joy to my body and yeah. to make, yeah, bring in more choices that just serve to make me feel good.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with losing weight or looking differently and everything to do with healing the relationships that were destroyed.
Yes.
By fat phobia.
Yeah.
The reason why I grew up always having a bad relationship with movement mm-hmm. was because it was used as a punishment.
Yes.
And a way to make me feel badly about myself and what I looked like.
Yeah.
Same goes with food. Mm-hmm. Like, fat phobia is the thing that destroyed those relationships.
Yes.
Now as an adult, I get to go back and build different habits and build different relationships with those things. Mm-hmm. And I can talk to someone else who's also done that work about that mm-hmm. because I know that we understand the perspective. And I don't know, like, if I say to a friend that hasn't done the work that I'm trying to, you know, eat a little bit more balanced and learn mm-hmm. how to cook some more healthy meals. Mm-hmm. I can't trust that they're not going to hear that and all of a sudden be like, oh my God, yeah, me too. I'm wanting to lose 10 pounds before blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And they take it to a way different place than what I'm intending it to be.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, well, now I can't have this conversation with you.
Yeah.
Because we're having two different conversations.
Yeah.
You're hearing me talk about health and you're thinking I'm talking about thinness.
Yes.
And I'm not.
Yes.
And I never will be. Mm-hmm. But to so many people, health and thinness is the same thing.
Yeah.
And to anybody who sees health and thinness as the same thing, I cannot talk to you about food, movement, my habits, what I'm exploring, what I'm not exploring. It's a part of my life I can't include you in because I have done too much work to get past that.
Yeah.
The false equation of thinness and health that I cannot engage in conversation with people who make that false equivalency.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, ultimately I'm like, okay, we are quite literally speaking two different languages.
Yeah.
We're like, I'm saying something entirely different. I'm talking about how I want my body to feel. You're talking about how you want your body to look.
Totally.
And that I will never, I'm not engaging in that.
Totally.
All love.
Yeah.
But I'm not engaging in that.
Yeah. Like, and I totally agree. This is something that, like, I honestly feel like the majority of times I have talked about this, it has been online.
Yeah.
To myself.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't often, I barely bring it up to anybody in real life because I actually don't trust people's ability to respond to me.
Yeah.
In a way that,
like, in a way that is normal.
Right. Totally.
In a way that is, like, normal for us. Totally. I think, but, like, weird for other people.
For sure. It's like, I would trust you and I to talk about that.
Yeah.
And to be, like, brutally honest, I actually don't know if I have many other friends that I would be like, totally, we get it, we are on the same page completely.
I think same.
And it's like, that's tough.
Yeah.
But also, like, this is also the fat experience,
right?
Like, sometimes you really do just look at your other fat friend and you're like, damn, sister,
damn, that's crazy.
Everyone else is crazy except for us. Yeah.
Well, and you and I also didn't even really talk about that stuff until, like, a couple years into our friendship. We're like, and the way that we talked about it was very much so, like, both of us being like, how do you feel about it? And the other person being like, how do you feel about it? And then we're both like, oh, okay, cool. Like,
neither of us is going to say anything crazy.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Great. That's so great. Because it is, again, it's like, it's really hard to have those conversations with a lot of people. Mm-hmm.
And I have a lot of empathy for that.
Yes.
And also, like, there is so much, like, protection and just, like, preservation that I want to do for my younger self.
Yeah.
And I also think, like, so much of it varies on who exactly you're talking to and what the experience is.
Yeah.
For me, I know I have a lot more flexibility for fat people that are struggling with this versus a thin person that is.
Yep.
That's my own. I just can't listen to a thin person talk about how much they hate being fat.
Totally.
That's my boundary.
Yeah.
Thin people don't get to complain to me about how fat they are and how horrible they feel. If a fat person is struggling with fatness and wants to say those things to me, I actually am receptive to hearing a fat person talk about that because that's a real experience that they're having.
Yeah, that's real.
That's a real thing that they are grappling with.
Yeah.
And I understand that as someone who also experiences the world in a fat body.
Mm-hmm.
But to listen to a thin person talk about how fat and awful they are, I can't do it. With peace and love, this is something different. And I have empathy for you and your journey. And I cannot, in protection of mine, I cannot be with you on yours.
Yeah. Because the reality is that what you're saying is, if I had your body, I would kill myself.
Right. And we can't do this together.
And I'm just not doing that because I do have my body.
Right.
And I'm not going to kill myself.
Right. And I do. So, I do have to wake up and live through my life every single day
in this body.
So I can't. Yeah. I cannot make exceptions for.
Yeah.
People who are struggling with these things. Just because I have empathy for you doesn't mean that I have to subject myself to, you know, being a listening ear.
It is so interesting because, like, the way that people are so ingrained in, like, fat phobia, it feels like I live on another planet.
I know,
sometimes.
It really does.
And again, it's like, then I will have people be like, but it's easy. Of course it's easy for you. You're just like this. And I'm like, no.
No, bitch.
It's been 10 fucking years of me rewiring my brain.
I made a conscious choice at some point to be different.
At some point.
There
I was
a,
like,
turning point in life where I made the conscious, knowing choice.
Yes.
To work on my body image and change my perspective.
Yes. And you look at me like people.
It was never a coincidence.
It was never a coincidence. my body didn't change. My mind did.
Right.
Like, I don't know. I don't know what to fucking tell you. It's just, yeah, it like blows my mind sometimes. And it's so interesting to me too, because I'm like, sometimes it baffles even me that I'm like, yeah, I can't believe that I thought that all of this stuff just wouldn't be available to me because of like, right, my butt. What?
I know.
Because
I remember my body? Things I said and conversations I had as like a young teenager that, mm-hmm, make me be like, what the fuck?
No, literally.
And
same.
Why did nobody else say what the fuck?
Well, this is what's so crazy too, is like, then you have like adults in your life being like, yeah, that's true. Right.
Like the amount of times I would like, as a 14-year-old, I will remember this for the rest of my life, but I remember at that age, it was either I was 13 or 14. I, for some reason, was under the impression that I was not allowed to wear a bikini, yeah, until my stomach looked a certain way.
Right.
I don't know why I thought that, uh-huh, or like who I thought was enforcing this rule.
Right.
But in my head, I literally was not allowed to,
yeah,
until I had a flat stomach. And I remember I, at the time, did have an eating disorder, and I had lost a pretty significant amount of weight as a 14-year-old by, you guessed it, not eating. Mm-hmm. And I remember going to the doctors for my annual checkup and asking my pediatrician how much more weight I'd have to lose to have a flat stomach.
Yeah.
Because my stomach still wasn't flat. And yeah, she was like, you actually should not lose any more weight.
Yeah.
This is genetically what your body should look like.
Yeah.
And I was like, what do you mean?
What are you talking about, girl?
So, but like, when can I wear a bikini though?
Yeah.
And she was like, right now?
Yeah.
And I was like, no.
Wrong.
That doesn't sound right.
Yeah.
And I think the hard part is that there was like no adult in my life that witnessed those conversations,
yeah,
and what I was assuming was correct and thought, oh no, that's not right. That's a child that needs help.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, a lot of the adults would look at me when I would express my feelings about my body and being like, how much weight do I have to lose to wear a bikini? They'd be like, oh my God, me too, girl. Me too, sister. I have to also lose a couple pounds before summer. Like, adults would commiserate with me.
Yeah.
More than they would ever look at me and be like, oh my God, honey, you are perfect and beautiful and gorgeous just as you are. Like, why do you think you need to change?
Yeah.
And now I look back and I'm like, what the fuck was wrong with all of you?
Yeah. I look back and I'm like, oh, you guys are in prison. I was like, you guys are in a prison of your own making that you,
unbelievable,
would like feed this shit to me and be like, yeah, you, the 6-year-old, like, right, you can't wear a bikini because you don't have the body for it. Like, something that was said to me when,
unreal,
I was 6 years old, by the way. Six years. I just got here.
Right.
Like, whoa, your mind is a prison to be saying that shit.
It's absurd.
It's absurd. And it's just, again, it's like, it's just so crazy to me because I'm like, you just can have the life that you want. You just have to choose that. And I'm not saying that as like a writing it off platitude kind of a thing. I'm like, no, the choosing is really hard.
Yeah.
But like, fucking do it.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, do it. We all can.
Yeah.
We all have the ability to like shed this thing,
totally,
off of us.
And like, do you not, I always will, like, I look back at that time and I think I get really hung up on like the younger self of it all. And I look, yeah, at like photos of myself as a kid and as a teenager at the times I was when, yeah, I hated myself the most. And I'm like, I feel sick about it.
Yeah.
Like, I've cried and cried and cried thinking about that little girl. How could you, in my head, it's like, how could you not have a moment where you're like, oh my God, she never deserved that and I was failed and I'm going to make sure that I don't continue this cycle?
Yes. I actually,
how does everyone not have that moment?
I actually had, I was like crying about this the other day, mm-hmm, because I was thinking about that little girl version of me and like, It's so hard. It's like we're inundated constantly,
yeah,
with media about like, you know, losing weight and blah, 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 and all this stuff. And I, you know, was like looking at whatever. It was like having this moment of like, God, like this is all happening again. And then I just had this other moment of like, I really, part of why I love the body now that I have now is because I'm showing the younger version of myself that it's possible to have this life in the body that I have now.
Totally.
And that like genuinely made me so emotional, because when I was younger, I had so much hatred for myself. And part of living in the body that I have now, I feel like is almost like an ode to that young version of me who deserves all of the love that I have for her now and deserved to have it then.
Yeah.
And it's just really, it makes my heart hurt thinking about the amount of like young girls and young people who feel that way now and how I felt then, and just like reckoning with it is like one of the most difficult things that a person can do. And I commend you for doing that. Mm-hmm. And
how awesome is it that we get to be different?
We get to choose differently.
And we get to break the cycle for other young women in our own lives.
Yeah. We get to choose differently.
Any young woman that comes in your orbit will feel safe and like they can embrace and accept themselves because of the work that you've done now.
Yeah.
Isn't that beautiful?
I've had people in my life tell me that they've changed the way that they think about their bodies because of me and how I talk about my own body.
It's a ripple effect.
It is.
Because once one person does and you get to like be the example to other people and like people start noticing that they feel lighter around you. They're not as judgmental or critical about themselves when they're in your presence. It suddenly it bleeds and more people, it starts to spread.
And you know, a lot of people have mind cops. And they have cops in their mind telling them, policing them and telling them what they can and cannot do. And you're lucky that you killed your mind cop.
Yeah.
And hopefully your friend will get to a point where they're able to kill their mind cop as well. It doesn't really sound like they're close to that at the moment.
No.
But what you can do is protect yourself from that type of language and behavior, because it's just insidious, man.
Yeah.
It grows like a weed and it is hard to get rid of once it's in there.
Yeah. But things can be different.
And things are different.
Things
do you
are
know how many people like the amount of people who I literally had multiple people come up to me the other night at Tanya's birthday and be like, Maddie is so hot.
So true.
And I'm like, period. Yes. Like
people are saying
literally people are saying, and like people fucking say that about me too, and I'm like yeah, because you can be in the body you have now, girl.
I could tell every plus size woman ever that it's like the secret sauce to being hot has actually nothing to do with what you look like, and everything to do with the person that you are.
It's so fucking true, dude.
Like this is huge news.
Yeah,
huge news for everyone. Just be cool,
straight up be cool, and know yourself.
Be cool, know who you are. Be open-minded.
You will be so sexy.
Come on, that's all it takes, baby.
That's literally people think that it takes something different. It doesn't.
No,
I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah. Totally.
Fat people are hot.
For sure.
And you don't got to do anything to change.
Yeah. Love.
All love.
All love to end the episode. Thanks so much for hanging out with us. If you'd like to keep this party going, you can join the Patreon and listen to the Emotionally Online post show.
Yo.
Please follow the podcast at Emotionally Online Pod. Shop our merch, emotionallyonline.shop. You can follow me at Maddie Drosbeck.
You can follow me at Meg Ruoco.
And we will see you guys in next week's episode. Goodbye. Bye.